first case this afternoon, 96-1853, Lounge Management versus Town of Trenton. Representing Lounge Management is Randall Teague. Is that correct? And he's being introduced by Matthew Biegert.
That is correct. May it please the court, my name is Matt Biegert. I am Wisconsin counsel for the plaintiff appellant, Lounge Management Limited. It is my privilege to introduce to you Mr. Randall Teague of Minneapolis, Minnesota, who will argue this case on behalf of Lounge Management.
And I'm assuming Mr. Teague is not a member of the Wisconsin Bar?
That is correct.
And has a motion been filed that you appear pro hac?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Teague.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, in 44 Liquor Mart versus Rhode Island, the United States Supreme Court said, the 21st Amendment does not in any way diminish the force of the Supremacy Clause, the Establishment Clause, or the Equal Protection Clause. We see no reason why the First Amendment should not be included in that list. Accordingly, we now hold that the 21st Amendment does not qualify the constitutional protection against abridgment of the freedom of speech embodied in the First Amendment. We are here today because with that statement, the United States Supreme Court has changed the rules as respects to regulating adult entertainment. This is a facial challenge to the validity of a Town of Trenton ordinance prohibiting nudity in licensed establishments. And today I'd like to make 3 points. First of all, it's clear that when the Town of Trenton regulates nudity and adult entertainment, nudity in licensed establishments, it is infringing upon rights guaranteed by the First Amendment. And this court in Madison versus Bauman said, whenever the government does that, the government bears the burden of proving the legitimacy of those regulations. The second is that from California versus LaRue in 1972, to Schultz versus the City of Cumberland in 1995, the government has been able to meet that burden by saying the 21st Amendment power to regulate the sale of liquor somehow creates an exception to the First Amendment and justifies the regulation. 44 Liquor Mart changed all that. It said the 21st Amendment no longer justifies an abridgment of First Amendment rights. Now, the court did qualify this by suggesting that the result in California versus Lulum in upholding the validity of the ordinance might nonetheless be upheld. In so doing, it cited two of its earlier cases. The first is Young versus American Mini Theaters, and the second is Barnes versus Glenn Theater Incorporated. Now, in Young versus American Mini Theaters, the court upheld what was nominally a content-based restriction on adults-only motion picture theaters, zoning them into special districts, by saying we are regulating not the content or the offensiveness of the material, but we are regulating the adverse secondary effects in the surrounding community, such as a decline in property values, such as an increase in crime, such as general blighting. In Barnes, the second case cited in 44 Liquor Mart, the court upheld the validity of Indiana's public nudity ordinance as against an as-applied challenge. And it was a fractured opinion with a three-justice plurality holding that the ordinance could be justified by the state's interest in protecting order and morality. Justice Scalia, in a concurring opinion, saying nude dancing wasn't entitled to First Amendment protection in any event. And Justice Souter saying, in accordance with Young versus American Mini Theaters, that the ordinance could be justified by the adverse secondary effects caused by adult entertainment. Well, the cases, and I've cited them and won't repeat them here, that have followed Barnes have said that if you apply the Marx test, that the holding of the court is the opinion that reaches the result on the narrowest grounds, the end result is that the Souter concurrence that says regulation of public nudity is justified by a showing of adverse secondary effects becomes the holding of the court. So consequently, what can be made of 44 Liquor Mart and its impact on regulation of nudity in liquor establishments is that what has happened is we have taken the absolute right of states to regulate liquor by virtue of the 21st Amendment and eliminated that and substituted for it the right to regulate nudity in liquor establishments pursuant to a secondary effects analysis, much like Young versus American Mini Theaters, much like Ward versus Rock Against Racism, City of Renton versus Playtime Theaters, Inc., and United States versus O'Brien. What that clearly means is that in order to sustain the type of regulation that is at issue here, we have to meet the time, place, and manner type of test in all of those cases. The city has a burden of showing that its ordinance is content neutral. They have a burden of showing that it advances a significant governmental interest unrelated to the suppression of free expression, that it is narrowly tailored.
What is the expression here?
The expression here is one that's been recognized by the United States Supreme Court in numerous decisions. It is erotic expression. It is entertainment expression. It's
dancing.
It's dancing. That's correct. It's dance. And the United States
Supreme Court... No one's saying a word, right?
What?
No one is saying a word.
Well, they may or may not. The record, you know, they may have songs. There's music accompanying the dance. But this type of activity is clearly held to be within the purview of the First Amendment as recently as the Barnes case, in which 8 of the 9 justices clearly said that dancing, even dancing including nudity, enjoys the protection of the First Amendment.
Now, you're speaking here in your brief of to showcase non-obscene nude and semi-nude. What is a non-obscene nude?
Well, a non-obscene nude dance is a nude dance performance that does not fall within the obscenity test of Miller versus California. The obscenity test is that it must appeal to the prurient interest in sex. It must depict specific sexual acts in a patently offensive way, and it must lack serious literary, political, or scientific value. Artistic value, left that out. But in any event, what we're talking about is the right to show dance that does not fall within the classic definition of Miller obscenity. And obviously nothing we are saying or advocating in this case would preclude the state from prosecuting for obscenity in the event that any of these dance performances cross the Miller versus California line.
Can't they show expression with their clothes on?
Well, obviously they can show expression with their clothes on. Just as you can show expression in a book, you don't have to make a motion picture out of it. The question is, how can you justify the government's infringement upon expression? And I think, and I would submit the plaintiffs would argue that you must make, at least in terms of a time, place, and manner regulation, the type of showing required in O'Brien, Ward, and the like. So it must be narrowly tailored to restrict only that expression that is necessary to advance a content-neutral goal, and there must be alternative avenues of communication.
Mr. Teague, can't you presume the secondary effects?
Absolutely not. And
why?
I think, well, first of all, I think there's substantial case law that indicates to the contrary. I think in both Young and Renton, secondary effects were established by the record at the time of enactment. I think, if anything, 44 Liquor Mart clearly says that we may not defer to governmental judgment in that regard. If you recall, the primary holding of 44 Liquor Mart was the application of the commercial speech test under Central Hudson, in which you have virtually the identical elements. You have to have a significant governmental interest and you have to have narrow tailoring. And what 8 of the 9 justices said is, we can't defer to the government to the government's judgment in that regard. You must produce evidence that establishes those things.
Secondary effects, though, really comes from Barnes and it comes from Souter's concurring opinion. And my recollection of his concurring opinion is he basically indicated that criminal activity and prostitution were secondary effects. He didn't look for proof in the record, from what I remember. Why does this court have to look for any more than that?
Well, and I recognize that. I think Barnes is a very fractured opinion, and Souter's, by luck, comes out to be the holding of the court. But Souter's opinion that says you don't need evidence of secondary effects is absolutely contradicted by all of the secondary effects cases. If you look at what's necessary in secondary effects cases, you have not only holding in 44 Liquor Mart, you have a holding in FCC versus Turner that says in order to infringe on First Amendment rights, government's burden is to produce the evidence. You have the holding in United States versus Virginia that says the government's justification for infringing on constitutional rights can't be hypothesized. It can't be invented post hoc in response to litigation. And what the cases have uniformly held is that the government must do one of two things in order to meet the burden on secondary effects. Either, number one, at the time of enactment, it has to rely upon empirical data or studies or evidence upon in which it could reasonably rely to believe that secondary effects take place. And that's one set of cases that says you have to rely upon it at the time of enactment. I think those are the more persuasive set of cases. The other set of cases, and the most recent is the Phillips versus Keyport case, decided by the Third Circuit this year, says you don't have to rely upon it at the time of enactment if at the time of trial you produce evidence that shows that adverse secondary effects take place. And you don't have to resolve that question in order to decide this case, because in this case, the town of Trenton didn't do either one. There is no evidence in the record that at the time the ordinance was considered, it evaluated adverse secondary effects and made a determination that secondary effects were present, were caused by this type of entertainment. And consequently, it didn't do the first one. But secondly, this was brought on by summary judgment. The city had the opportunity to present any evidence of adverse secondary effects it wanted to in its motion for summary judgment. It didn't do so. It didn't do either one. So in order to establish the burden of content neutrality, there must be a showing that they relied upon adverse secondary effects. They simply have not made the showing and have not met the burden of proof.
But Barnes doesn't require that. In Barnes, you didn't have clear evidence, you didn't have any evidence, that at the time that the statute was enacted that they were trying to curtail adverse secondary effects, as I recall Justice Souter's discussion of that. And then, of course, the record didn't reflect any detail of ensuing adverse secondary effects. So why do you need it here if Barnes didn't need it?
Well, as I said, Barnes, the secondary effects opinion of Barnes is one justice. And it gives you the holding of Barnes that says you need a showing of adverse secondary effects to justify the regulation. But it's certainly Justice Souter's concurring opinion in Barnes doesn't overrule all of these other opinions that say you need a factual basis to infringe upon First Amendment rights. It certainly doesn't. The eight justices in 44 Liquor Mart says you can't defer to the government's judgment in terms of whether or not you've got a significant governmental interest. You can't defer to the government's interest on narrow tailoring. Certainly, Justice Souter's single opinion in Barnes can't overrule all of that.
Well, what about Black? Isn't that the case that says you take the narrow concurring and that's the rule of the case, and then you've got a rule of the United States Supreme Court case law?
Well, and I think it's Marx that says that. But certainly, I think the Marx reading of Barnes is that secondary effects is the justification for regulation of public nudity. It doesn't. I don't think you can go beyond that when you have all of these other cases that say the government's got to produce evidence when it invades First Amendment rights. And especially 44 Liquor Mart saying we're now going to strictly scrutinize that evidence.
Other than obscenity, are there any other ways that the town can regulate and prohibit nudity? Or another way of phrasing my question is, I gather you think this is overly broad.
That's going to be my next argument, that not only does it meet the content neutrality test, but it cannot prohibit more expression that is necessary to meet the goal of legitimate the legitimate content neutral goal. So even if you were to presume that nude dancing causes some adverse secondary effects, the next element of the test is you can't prohibit more expression than is necessary to accomplish the content neutral goal.
And the town of Trenton says, okay, court, if this is too broad, you narrow it down. How would you narrow this down so that you can make it legitimate?
Well,
in your opinion.
Recognizing first that it's not my job to teach the town of Trenton how to put my clients out of business.
Don't you want to help the court?
I'll give you a couple of quick suggestions. First is direct your attention to Tallis versus San Bernardino County. In that case, the court said it was unconstitutionally overbroad to apply adult entertainment zoning to a theater which on one occasion showed an adult movie. And this ordinance does exactly the same thing. It says any showing of nudity, one nude performance constitutes a violation of the law. There's no showing that a single showing of an adult film at a movie or a single nude dance performance at a theater causes the kind of adverse secondary effects.
But if you had, you're only entitled to 10 showings a week, you'd be here anyway.
Well, that's true, and I guess the question...
What grounds? Overly broad?
It may well be overly broad. The question is, what is it about nude dancing or any type of performance that causes adverse secondary effects? And this is why you have to have some evidence. I would suggest, for instance, that it is very likely that the combination of nudity and alcohol, if anything, inhibits secondary effects. And I would suggest this for a couple of reasons. First of all, any time you have a liquor license, you have a valuable commodity which can be taken away for any of a number of reasons. It can be taken away if you serve underage drinkers. It can be taken away if you're open after hours. It can be taken away if you have an excessive number of police calls.
It's limited to liquor places?
Your Honor, on its face, the ordinance says public licensed establishments, and it defines the word public as recreation areas, restaurants, campgrounds, and the like, so hotels and motels. So on its face, it is not limited to liquor establishments, and that's another area of overbreadth. So the very presence of a licensed liquor establishment, the very presence of a liquor license, inhibits adverse secondary effects that wouldn't be that in a way that somebody who doesn't have to comply with liquor licensing doesn't have to live with. The other way I would suggest is the economic incentive without a liquor license is in fact exactly the opposite. Without a liquor license, you are encouraged to be the type of business that causes adverse secondary effects. And I say this for this reason. Let's suppose a bar, an establishment in Hager City has no liquor license. His customers say, why in the world should I patronize your establishment, which requires me to drink soda pop while I watch the nude dancing, when I can just go a few miles down the road to Somerset and Holton, and I can have a bump and a beer while I watch my nude dancing? Why in the world should I patronize your establishment? And the only logically competitive answer the non-liquor establishment can give is, you see a better show at my place. And the only way a non-liquor establishment can compete is moving away from constitutionally protected expressive erotic dance toward what...
their prices.
Yeah, you can... Yeah,
lots of ways to compete.
But I would suggest the way that one is often required to compete is to move away from protected expression and toward...
You think this protects everybody from obscenity and erotica?
My suggestion is that if you were to examine what causes adverse secondary effects, the presence of a liquor license, if anything, inhibits adverse secondary effects rather than advances it. And these questions have not been discussed publicly for 25 years because of California versus LaRue. Now, and
Mr.
so
Chief,
it's...
Let me touch on the case you just talked about, the LaRue case. In that case, the U.S. Supreme Court talked about the context and basically said the context they were going to look at was places that served liquor by the drink, and they were limiting their decision accordingly. Why couldn't this court, since your client is a liquor-serving establishment, do the same thing, take the same approach, and say we're going to interpret this statute within the context presented by this case?
I think the reason you can't do it is because the nature of the analysis has changed. The United States Supreme Court in California versus LaRue, because of the 21st Amendment, granted deference to the city's judgment, or the state's judgment in that case, that the combination of liquor and nudity caused these adverse secondary effects. I think what 44 Liquor Mart and the secondary effects analysis require the city to do is to demonstrate that such a relationship exists, and more importantly, to narrowly tailor their ordinance to only those uses that cause adverse secondary effects. I think even under there is simply no way the city can meet its burden of showing that a showing of King Lear at a licensed liquor establishment with a brief scene of nudity in it is going to cause any adverse secondary effects. This ordinance prohibits that. There's no way that a showing of Dances with Wolves showing Kevin Costner's posterior in a licensed liquor establishment will cause adverse secondary effects. And again, this ordinance prohibits it. So even if you say California versus LaRue is a proper adverse secondary effects test, you still have to do the narrow tailoring that is required when you make it a secondary effects analysis type of case.
If the tavern or the liquor establishment has a television with cable on it and late night shows show some brief nudity, would that establishment be subject to prosecution under this ordinance?
I think there's at least a possibility that would. It says nudity. I don't think it distinguishes between live nudity and film nudity. Certainly, if you look at this ordinance, there are just any of a number of ways it's unconstitutionally overbroad. It certainly impinges upon far more constitutionally protected activity than is required to meet any type of content-neutral goal in terms of adverse secondary effects.
One other question. I don't think you answered the chief's question about whether or not this ordinance could be drafted constitutionally. Is your failure to answer indicative that you don't think this can be regulated?
I think you can make a regulation that will pass constitutional muster if what you regulate relates to what causes adverse secondary effects. And if you can establish that pure nude dancing in combination with liquor causes adverse secondary effects, should demonstrate that factually, whether it be at the time of the enactment ordinance or the time of trial, an ordinance may well pass constitutional muster. But what I'm saying is that this ordinance, which was enacted with no such showing, where no such showing was made at trial, and where the breadth of the ordinance clearly encompasses far more constitutionally protected activity than is necessary for any content-neutral goals, this ordinance can't pass constitutional muster.
Yeah, well, counsel, I'm sure that if I looked hard enough, I could find some study that says that where you got nudity and drinking, that incites arousal, that it makes it more profitable a venue for prostitution, that arousal might increase rape prospects. What's the matter with our taking judicial notice of such studies? I don't know of them, but I can't believe they're not out there.
Well, I guess that's one of the problems. There are no, and in fact, there are substantial studies to the contrary. And the question is, and it seems to me the reason why the courts have articulated the rules is they want to make sure that what is present is a genuine attempt to regulate secondary effects and not a pretext to censor the type of expression that people don't like. And there's a reason for the requirement, and the court should enforce that reason.
Thank you, counsel. Striggle, representing the town of Trenton.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Catherine Quiggle. I represent the town of Trenton, council. The town of Trenton is also here for the purpose of attending and listening to the court's questions and arguments. It's our position that this ordinance is constitutional under a long line of cases, LaRue, Renton, Barnes, and 44 Liquor Mart. 44 Liquor Mart did not overrule LaRue. In fact, the court went to great pains to state that the LaRue result would have been the same regardless of any reliance on 21st Amendment authority. And so it seems to me that in 44 Liquor Mart, the court was indicating that its decision in that case, which related to commercial speech, was not intended to apply to overrule LaRue or to change the rules as far as the constitutionality of ordinances prohibiting nudity on liquor-licensed premises.
Now, this isn't limited to liquor licenses.
The ordinance refers to the town's authority under Chapter 125. The town's position is that it is intended to apply to liquor-licensed premises, and the trial court, in fact, ruled that that is the way it does apply, and that is, and so narrowed it.
Why do you have anything about a bathroom?
Pardon me?
Then why are you dealing with a bathroom?
Well, there's bathrooms in liquor licensed premises, and in order to make it clear that doing what you need to do in a bathroom does not constitute public nudity, that's why it refers to bathrooms.
So you're saying this doesn't refer to a restaurant that doesn't have a liquor license?
No, it refers to liquor licensed premises. That is the way the town has enforced it. That's the way the trial court construed it.
What if in Joe's tap he's got a picture of a playmate hanging up on the wall? Is that in violation of the ordinance?
I think that the intent of the ordinance is...
I'm not talking about the intent. I'm talking about, based upon the wording of the statute, can that owner of that tavern be prosecuted under this ordinance?
I think a common sense reading of the statute results in, this is public live nudity we're talking about.
Do you have any citation that says common sense is the way that these have to be interpreted?
You have to look at the plain meaning and the commonly understood meaning of the words, and so...
Well, what words prohibit, what words say that that's okay? I just read, there shall be no public nudity at a public licensed establishment. And it says, nudity means the showing or exposing of the human male or female genitals, pubic area, or buttocks, et cetera, or female breasts.
Arguably, a picture could fall into that.
Then arguably, an R-rated movie being shown on the local cable television, if that television is in the tavern, they're in violation. Is that correct?
It's theoretically possible. The situation we're presented with is not theoretical, it's very real. It's live nude dancing in a liquor-licensed premises. And so that is the situation the court needs to look at, and theoretical possibilities of a variety of applications aren't the issue in this case. And to the extent, I think what you're getting at is overbreadth.
I don't think that's correct. Isn't overbreadth an issue in this case?
Overbreadth is an issue, and we need to look at that. And what the courts have said with regard to overbreadth is that it's a departure from the standard practice. The purpose of overbreadth is to avoid the chilling effect of free expression, and that we apply overbreadth or the concerns of overbreadth are less forceful when it comes to regulating conduct rather than pure speech and the dissemination of ideas.
Let me give you an example, because I think examples are relevant in regard to overbreath questions. Let's say that in the town you had a ballet being put on, and it was being put on at a theater that was able to serve liquor by the drink during intermission. And let's say that you had nudity during the course of that ballet. Would that violate your ordinance?
It's theoretically possible. Again, in connection with determining the constitutionality of public nudity ordinances, the courts have looked at, is the overbreadth real and substantial?
Counsel, Mitchell, 163, Wisconsin 2nd, Menzel,
195 Wisconsin Second says, use of hypotheticals to demonstrate how the challenged ordinance or statute could impede the rights of other citizens is part of the overbreadth analysis. How do you distinguish those?
It is part of the overbreadth analysis, but within the context of regulations regarding conduct, the U.S. Supreme Court has stated and the Wisconsin Court has stated or cited the U.S. Supreme Court that the overbreadth has to be real and substantial. In this
Let me give you an example. I mean, of a real example. Let's assume that this ordinance is in effect and there's a bar in town that the city officials don't like, but they have their license and liquor license, and it's not about to expire. And on the television at night is not an R-rated movie, but commercial television from 9 to 10 o'clock at night. Frequently on commercial shows, regular old shows, you can see public nudity. They show individuals in some of the police shows. You can see the buttocks exposed. And a police officer is sitting in there, and he's been wanting to try to get this bar for some violation so they can close it down. Cannot he cite this bar for this violation?
It's theoretically possible. The way the courts have avoided...
The answer is yes, right? I mean, theoretically, that scenario I gave you is not an unusual scenario, is it? That some municipality or some governing body or some police department would like to be able to cite a liquor establishment as much as they can in order in hopes to get it closed down.
There may be isolated instances, and the way the courts have dealt with that is to say that this type of ordinance, in the vast majority of cases, reaches a substantial or serves a substantial governmental purpose. To the extent necessary to preserve First Amendment rights, the ordinance may not be applied in some situations. That's what the Indiana Supreme Court...
So what about my example? Are you saying that some court's going to say that if it's just commercial television, then what? Then the police can't enforce it?
The question is, does it give rise to secondary effects? And rather than invalidate the ordinance on its face, the courts have stated that because the ordinance does not reach a substantial amount of protected conduct, they will recognize that there may be some instances in which it could, but rather than invalidate the ordinance, they will construe it on a case-by-case basis.
Well, we agree that there's public nudity in bars all over the state on a regular basis that have commercial television on in the evening hours.
I don't know that. Not in the record.
Okay.
I can't.
All right.
Well, but the problem...
go ahead.
The problem I have with your response is it's theoretically possible means that this ordinance covers a whole wide range of activities and that you're leaving it up to the enforcer, law enforcement officer, to determine what's in and out, and it's not defined. Therefore, if it's not overly broad, it's vague. I mean, we can give you examples. We can give you examples of artwork that hangs in every museum. Now we're going to put it in a bar because this guy's an art lover. We can put statues there of showing nude figures. We can bring in artifacts from all over the world showing figures in a variety of sexual positions. That's all covered here.
I think what the court needs to look at, there are possibilities, certainly, but the case law has indicated that these ordinances are constitutional, and the reason they are not substantially overbroad. The court has a duty to interpret the ordinance in such a way as to preserve its constitutionality.
Okay. How do you want us to interpret it? Why don't you rewrite the statute for us as you want us to rewrite it?
No, I'm not asking the court to rewrite it.
Well, that's what you're doing when you say to interpret it. You're asking us to change the words here. First of all, you want us to change that there shall be no public nudity where there's activity rather than stills, if I heard you right. And that you want it not at a publicly licensed establishment, but at an establishment that is licensed to sell alcoholic beverages. So now we
That's one. Those are a couple of changes, right?
Well, the trial court's already construed it that way, and I believe the references to Chapter 125 in the ordinance,
well, the ordinance
support
says,
that construction.
The ordinance says granted by virtue of present statutes, including 125.10, not limited to 125.10. What else do we have to do?
I'm not asking the court to rewrite the statute. I think the appropriate approach is what the Indiana Supreme Court did, which the U.S. Supreme Court recognized as a valid way of protecting First Amendment rights, is to recognize that there may be some situations in which enforcement of the statute or ordinance would be unconstitutional, or that, put another way, in some situations, nudity must be tolerated in order to protect First Amendment rights. But rather than try...
If I hold the license... What you're telling me is, if I'm the license holder, I'm forced to guess what is protected and what is not. Where's the line? I've got to, not only do I have to guess, but I have to guess as to individual enforcers, because what is acceptable in the mind of one enforcement agency may not be acceptable in the eyes of another.
The courts have looked at the legitimate concern towns and cities are trying to serve in adopting these ordinances. And to the extent, rather than invalidating the ordinance, the courts have said we can enforce them where the conduct falls squarely within that type of conduct recognized as causing secondary effects. And rather...
So you do admit that there should be there could be secondary effects. Now, what does this record show us with respect to secondary effects?
I don't admit at all that there has to be a showing of secondary effects. What I said was those types of establishments that courts have recognized as giving rise to secondary effects. In LaRue, there were studies showing that the combination of liquor and nudity gave rise to increased criminal behavior. In Renton, there were studies from Seattle showing that. So there's plenty of studies showing that these types of establishments give rise to secondary effects. The courts have not required each town or city to repeat and do their own study. They can learn from other cities. What the court can do is say that for those establishments that fall squarely within those previously recognized as causing secondary offense, the ordinance is, or secondary effects, the ordinance is constitutional.
Well, has this ordinance been upheld in any other state, any other jurisdiction, an ordinance as broad as this?
Well, this is actually narrower than Barnes. Barnes was a statute prohibiting public nudity across the board, and it defined nudity just about, if I recall correctly, exactly the same as this statute, and the court held that statute was constitutional even without restricting it to liquor-licensed establishments.
Counsel, let's stay with this ordinance and not speak hypothetically. In sub B of the ordinance, as I read it, and we'll move out of bars and go to a hotel or a resort, this ordinance prohibits two consenting adults from being in a hotel room nude together, doesn't it?
No. Section B would be an exception.
Well, Section B reads, this ordinance is not to be interpreted to prevent activities in rooms privately rented in a hotel if the persons renting are immediate family members. So if they're not immediate family members, as I read it, then there's a prohibition of nudity in the hotel room.
I think...
Perhaps I'm misreading.
I think what it's... I guess...
What
is
immediate family members?
They're not inviting members of the public. So that you don't have to be an immediate family member, you just can't invite members of the public into your room.
Well, members of the public who are not immediate family members. Okay, if very hypothetically speaking, if I had a boyfriend who was not a member of my immediate family, And I invited him into, I don't want to get that personal. If Mary had a point,
I get where you're going, but that I think going into the
I
room.
Think the idea is members of the public.
Members of the public who are not immediate family members.
So the idea, members of the public, is that you're going out on the street and inviting any member of the public, not someone you're...
If that were true, you wouldn't need who are not immediate family members. But this ordinance assumes that immediate family members are members of the public. But if they come into your room, it's okay.
I think the clear intent of that provision, while it may not be worded exactly correctly, is to protect conduct by consenting adults within the confines of a hotel room or campground or some
such
thing.
This would protect prostitution. That's consenting adults.
Well, that's a violation of state law, and so it's not intended to protect criminal conduct.
Okay. And if it's not paid for, then that doesn't fall into prostitution, it's okay under B.
If it's not a violation of state law, and it's consenting adults, it's not public nudity, as defined in the ordinance.
Well, look, you've got members of the public, and this is one sphere. And some of that sphere of the members of the public are Mary's immediate family. And you carve out another sphere within that large sphere. So if you're not a member of Mary's immediate family, you're a member of the public. And those members of the public, according to the word, who are not immediate family members, can't be, a wording of the ordinance, can't be in that hotel room or resort room or motel room nude.
I think the court's obligation is to construe this ordinance to try to discover the intent behind the ordinance. And the intent behind that provision, it's clearly intended to protect activity, not illegal, between consenting members of the public, not in a public place within a hotel room. They wouldn't have had that provision in there if that wasn't the intent behind the provision. You can always think of possibilities, ways language does not correctly serve the purpose, but I think in reading that provision, you can see what the intent is, and that intent is legitimate.
Ms. Quigley, the question is whether or not the burden should be on the town to draft an ordinance that says what it means and means what it says, or whether the court should go in effect, whether you want to call it redrafting or not, interpret it and narrow it and change it to make it constitutional.
I think with respect to ordinances regulating conduct, the overbreadth facially invalidating a statute has been determined to be strong medicine. And so to the extent that this regulates conduct, the overbreadth analysis, courts are very hesitant to invalidate an otherwise constitutional statute that reaches a vast majority of conduct that it legitimately reaches. The courts have required substantial and real overbreadth. Furthermore, the courts have indicated that that they are not going to try to think of all the various possibilities in which the statute might be unconstitutional. Rather, if it doesn't reach a substantial amount of protected activity, the ordinance is constitutional, and the way to narrow it is to do it on a case-by-case basis for very good reason, because all these situations are really very fact-based, and it's in actual factual context that we need to determine whether the ordinance is constitutionally applied or not constitutionally applied.
The problem I have with that argument is that, and it's certainly true, we try to give a presumption to legislation, and sometimes sort of obscure examples are pulled out of the air, but the language of this ordinance is so clear. There should be no public nudity at a public licensed establishment, period, that it covers everything, potentially, from the artworks that the Chief Justice has mentioned to a woman breastfeeding who may expose her breast to all sorts of activities, and there are no restrictions on the face of this ordinance to sort of narrow it or to show what the intent is, this intent that you keep telling us. It's just any public nudity, whether it be still, whether it be dancing, whether it be on the wall. Why can't there be why is there not legislation that's clear as to what it is the city of Trenton is trying to get at, than this blanket statement that there be no public nudity at a public license establishment?
First off, that's the type of statute that was ruled constitutional in Barnes. This is a township. While they have an obligation to draft legislation as well as they can, it's impossible to think of all the various circumstances in which legislation might be applied or not applied. The reality is, in the town of Trenton, this ordinance deals with bars and nudity, live nudity. That is the reality.
But neither of those things are in the ordinance. It doesn't say live nudity, and it doesn't say bars or taverns.
The references to Chapter 125, I think, show an intent that it's intended to apply to prohibit nudity in conjunction with liquor consumption.
How many bars or taverns are there in the town of Trenton?
I'm not sure. I want to say five or seven.
How many have live nude dancing?
Of the bars? None. Until
lounge.
It's
okay, so
prohibited.
It's just one.
Correct.
Okay. Well, what caused the ordinance? I mean, this ordinances don't spring up from, you got four bars, they're all family bars, there's no dancing, no nudity. Why in 92 did the town adopt this ordinance?
It's not part of the record. I don't know exactly. My guess is that there was some concern that this might come into the town, just as zoning ordinances are adopted before the businesses actually locate or in anticipation of problems. My guess is that that was the reason it was adopted, and certainly that's a legitimate role of government.
I gather this is not a standard form ordinance that the League of Municipalities or the Town Association has provided the community.
I don't know. I was not involved in the drafting or adoption of the ordinance, so I really can't answer that question. As a practical matter, I do know townships do look to those types of organizations for help in providing sample ordinances, so it's not unlikely that it was some kind of a sample ordinance.
Now, Ms. Quigley, as I hear you speaking in this argument, the intent of the ordinance is primarily twofold, to prohibit, I see two factors here, to prohibit live nudity in taverns.
In liquor-licensed establishments, yep. Yes.
Very narrowly targeted.
Yeah, that is our position, that the town is not prohibiting the expression entirely. It's very different from 44 Liquor Mart, in which, number one, that dealt with written commercial speech, and it dealt with a complete prohibition of a certain type of speech. In this situation, there are other avenues for the expression in unlicensed premises or with a minimum amount of clothing. So that is what the courts have looked at in determining these ordinances are constitutional, is that it does allow for other avenues of expressing, and this ordinance certainly does that.
Well, it seems to me that the target gun is a very specific target that could be taken care of with a rifle bullet, but instead the township has chosen a shotgun.
Well,
is that your understanding? That's okay.
No, the ordinance is intended to apply to live nudity in liquor licensed establishments.
Right.
That is not a shotgun. That is intended to.
That's the intent. That's what I said. The intent seems to be very narrow, and yet the ordinance is drawn extremely broad.
Again, I think the references to liquor twice in the statute show that intent. In defining nudity in barns, it's the same definition that the court held constitutional. It's assumed, I guess, that it's live nudity. We need to look at, you know, what the courts have done with these and take some guidance from them. And they have found that this is a significant concern on the parts of government, that these adverse secondary effects are very real, and that an ordinance such as this is narrowly targeted to serve that interest.
And I don't mean to pound this, but at least if I'm going to write this opinion, and whoever writes this opinion for purposes of this opinion anyway, you do concede that the intent was the intent to prohibit live nudity in liquor establishments.
Yes.
That covers campgrounds. I don't camp, so I don't know. A camp license for liquor?
It could be. There are, as far as I know, and this isn't in the record, and I don't know for sure, but I'm assuming there aren't campgrounds. The idea is there could be, a campground could have a liquor license. There's a variety of types of establishments that could have a liquor license. I guess what I'd just like to remind the court is that the town isn't doing anything different than what has been done in several cases that was recently affirmed in 44 Liquor Mart. And I think the reason the courts have upheld the constitutionality of these ordinances is that they do serve a very substantial government interest, and they are narrowly defined. And for
the government interest is morality?
No, the government interest that Souter identified, and the most narrow construction is what's required, is the adverse secondary effects that,
and they are?
Criminal behavior, prostitution, sexual assault, drug sales, all those kinds of behaviors have been found consistently in cities to occur more in liquor-licensed establishments in which nudity is
than
involved.
In just plain liquor establishments?
Yes. That was the basis of the LaRue holding, that these types of criminal behavior increased in those types of establishments. The court hasn't asked any questions regarding the notice of claim defense. I guess I do want to just address that briefly, that it's an issue that was raised on appeal, and the trial court held that it was waived because it's a defense related to personal jurisdiction. As stated in my brief, it's the town's position, it's not related to personal jurisdiction. It has nothing to do with whether the court can reason it, whether the service statutes have been complied with and whether there's minimum contacts. It's simply a procedural requirement that must be complied with prior to filing suit against a governmental unit.
Ms. Quigel, in that regard, doesn't Felder versus Casey cover this situation? I noticed in the complaint there's specific reference to 42 U.S.C. 1983.
There's also specific reference to the Wisconsin statute. So, yes, with regard to the U.S. constitutional claims, the notice of claim defense is not a defense to those claims, but it is a defense to state law claims, and that's why it's important for the court to look at it and decide it. Furthermore, the town raised the defense in its amended complaint. Amendments are allowed and relate back to the original, amended answer. There's no reason why that amended answer shouldn't be sufficient to raise that defense. There's no evidence of any kind of prejudice to the plaintiff. The amended answer was filed somewhere around 3 weeks after the original answer. I think the brief adequately states that. I won't go into it since the main focus is the First Amendment questions.
Let me ask you, I'm looking at Barnes. Do you recall whether there was an overbreath argument in Barnes?
It came up indirectly. In Barnes, the Indiana Supreme Court, in construing that statute, which prohibited public nudity, just as this one did, stated that in certain limited situations, nudity must be allowed when it is part of some larger form of expression that merits First Amendment protection. The court did not identify and go through a litany of the various types of situations that might be. It simply recognized that there are situations where nudity must be allowed. And instead of invalidating the statute, that recognition was sufficient, not only for the Indiana court, but for the U.S. Supreme Court, to narrow and preserve the constitutionality of the statute.
So you believe the court, and I haven't looked at it for that issue, but you believe that the U.S. Supreme Court did resolve the overbreath issue also in this case?
Yes, that as construed by the state court, this ordinance was not unconstitutional. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kriegel. Mr. Tighe?
Counsel, I'm going to follow right up with Justice Geske's question, if I may. Footnote 2 in Justice Souter's opinion in Barnes says, because there's no overbreath challenge, we're not addressing it. But I think that it seems to me the fourth prong of the O'Brien test is really an overbreath test when it says the regulations are narrowly tailored. So I was perplexed by that comment by Souter. And, of course, he went through the O'Brien test. Is there any difference between the fourth part of the O'Brien test, the regulations are narrowly tailored, and an overbreath analysis? Do you understand my
question? Yes, I do understand your question. I don't know that there is a substantial difference, but I think the majority of the court didn't look at overbreath in Barnes because it was abandoned in the Seventh Circuit because of Basinger.
Because of what?
Of the Basinger case. The Basinger case adopted this narrowing construction that Ms. Quiggle talked about, and because of that, the overbreath challenge was abandoned in the Seventh Circuit, and that was the only thing that was before the court in Barnes was the only thing that was before the court in Barnes was the issue of the constitutionality of this statute as applied to the facts of this case, which was a new dance establishment. So the answer is Barnes simply did not deal with the issue of facial overbreath.
Yes, but then my question is, isn't the fourth prong of O'Brien really an overbreath? I mean, it says if the regulations are narrowly tailored. The flip side of not being narrowly tailored is being overly broad. And so don't you get into it that way, even though Souter says there's no overbreath challenge before us?
It is, except, I guess, in this sense. The difference is this. Under overbreath, somebody whose own conduct falls outside the purview of constitutional protection has standing to raise the overbreath challenge, even though his own conduct may be prohibited. I think that may not be the case with respect to the fourth prong of O'Brien, although the court isn't real clear about that. I think Justice Babbage had the problem with Basinger nailed right on the head, which is what Basinger essentially says is instead of invalidating the ordinance, what we are going to do is, after the fact, decide whether or not particular conduct falls within the intended scope of the ordinance. Is this presentation something that causes adverse secondary effects or not? And Justice Babbage had it right. What this, the very purpose of allowing the overbreath exception to the standing requirement is, an overly broad ordinance not only suppresses the speech of the person at issue, but chills all other protected speech. And when you've got this ordinance, which on its face says hanging a Playboy centerfold up in the bar violates the ordinance, that says putting on a performance of hair in a place that sells liquor violates the ordinance, and your only defense is after the fact, after you're prosecuted, after the forfeiture proceeding commences, or after the license revocation commences, you can raise this as a defense. And the problem with that is you don't know what the defense is until you've already suffered the penalty, and your constitutionally protected speech is chilled. And that's a fundamental purpose behind the overbreath doctrine. And Basinger simply doesn't address that, and certainly doesn't address it adequately.
In Barnes, does that?
Well, I'm saying Overbreath was not an issue at Barnes, and the reason it wasn't was because of Basinger. Basinger was the state court case that essentially adopted this after-the-fact analysis. And a second problem with this after-the-fact analysis is, Ms. Quiggle says, well, the test is going to be, does the particular speech, the performance, or whatever it is this the type of thing that causes adverse secondary effects? Well, how is somebody to know that when the city hasn't defined what causes adverse secondary effects, hasn't considered any evidence of what causes adverse secondary effects, and produces no evidence at trial of what causes adverse secondary effects? You do nothing but increase the chill, enhance the vagueness, enhance the constitutional problems by adopting this kind of after-the-fact exception.
Thank you, Mr. Dye. That concludes the arguments in 96-1853.